Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Wednesday. Okay, there we go. It's the Wednesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, since it is Wednesday, the new blog went up this morning, so swing on over there, check that out, see what's going on over there. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link itself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you were over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three E's.
All right. Now, you know, Dan, I wanted to get your thoughts on this right off the bat, because I found it quite interesting when it comes to baseball here. You know, the Yankees let Joe Girardi go, and we'll get to that in a minute. But when they're bringing new guys in, you know, after their interview process, they're setting it up so they actually have to do a press conference with the media. Is this our new wave of hiring managers, or what's the deal with that?
I mean, I thought they always have a press conference. I didn't know that was anything different or new.
No, only when they hire the guy. This is everybody's got to do a press conference.
Oh, you mean each and every candidate?
Yes.
Well, maybe they want to see how they do in front of the media. I mean, what other explanation would there be?
But, I mean, do you think that needs to be a prerequisite to be a good manager? You know, like, I mean, I understand the, you know, the media is part of it and all that kind of funky stuff nowadays. But I got to tell you, if I've got a good manager, I don't really care how he handles the media.
Well, maybe they want to see if he comes out and says something stupid that'll get himself in trouble, kind of like how Degan did. Granted, that was an interview.
Yeah, but again,
and not a press day.
You know, I mean, again, I think if he's a good manager, can't you? I mean, obviously, you can have the kind of stupid racist stuff like Ozzie let, you know, spew out of his mouth there. That was just dumb. But, you know, I mean, if you get a guy who's a little borderline nuts and yells and screams at the media, or, you know, maybe doesn't have the best relationship with them, but they're winning. And, you know, you're looking at a guy who's going to take over what should be a pretty good Yankee team. I mean, should you care that much about it that he, you know, especially the media like New York, that he handles them correctly?
Well, yeah, because then you'll have to hear about it. I mean, personally, no, I think it's, doesn't make sense, but, you know, I mean, if I were hired, you got to go through the process, but if you're not the manager, what's the point?
So, yeah, it just seemed kind of odd, you know, because, like, they're interviewing Robbie Thompson tomorrow, I believe it is, and then after his interview is over, he's got to go into their press room and, you know, go up against the New York media. But, I mean, even more oddly is, you know, I don't know how much he can divulge about the interview process. I mean, I'm not quite sure what they're going to ask him, you know, other than, well, do you think you'll make a good manager? And of course we know the answer to that. So, again, I'm not quite sure how that kind of stumbles into it. So I was confused, but, you know, you're more of a sabermetric guy. So I figured, you know, you might have a better handle on this.
Yeah, well, that has nothing to do with sabermetrics.
Oh, okay.
That, bit more of a conflict of interest, because you're, if that's the way you're going to go, it's kind of saying to me that you're allowing the press to maybe influence your decision and who the manager should be. And, you know, my conspiracy theory of how the media can be controlled with secret meetings like the Bears have, the Chicago media, kind of seems true.
Yeah, it just seems kind of weird. I mean, because if they wanted to, and, you know, who, you know, not saying they would or they wouldn't, but, you know, they could really sabotage a guy, couldn't they, if they didn't want that guy in town?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. It seemed all kind of weird. But, you know, the one thing when we, you know, it came to the Yankees, obviously, you know, we were quite a bit caught up with, you know, World Series talk and, you know, a lot of the other stuff that was going on there. But, you know, they did, you know, walk away from Joe Girardi, call it firing, however you want to look at it. You know, basically he just wasn't given a new contract. And now the reason, and now Brian Cashman has actually came out and said this. He said that Girardi didn't connect and or communicate well enough with his young players. You know, obviously, Dan, that's a big, big window there. But is this just an old school guy in Girardi who maybe had some behind the scenes issues talking to this young crop of basically sissied out players that we have in the game now?
I mean, I guess, but at the same time, we've seen guys come from different organizations where they were maybe not highly thought of improve with the Yankees. So that, it's kind of a confusing statement. And I'm talking, of course, about the middle infield to start with, and that's Castro and Didi. But then again, the Yankees did over the last year have a huge influx of young, you know, brand new talent. So, you know, maybe he wasn't handing out trophies every Friday.
Yeah, the other quote from Cashman here is, with a young, impressionable core serving as the homegrown foundation of the Yankees moving forward was what led to his ouster, that meaning Girardi being the guy who got ousted there. You know, again, this is kind of odd. I mean, here's a team that contended for first place, you know, the entire year, ended up in, you know, did they end up going? The ALCS, right? That's what they are there.
Yep.
You know, a game away from the World Series, and you get rid of your manager who took you there. It, you know, and I mean, just obviously the reasoning just, it seems a little weird, because to win as many games as they won, didn't he have to connect with them last year?
Pretty much. I mean, that's like saying it's his fault Clint Frazier didn't stay up there, that, you know, Gleyber Torres didn't come up, and that Aaron Judge struck out 200 times.
Yeah. So, you know, and then I guess, you know, kind of moving forward, does this mean now, you know, like I mentioned, they're interviewing Robbie Thompson. He's been in the Yankee organization for, I believe I heard, 16 years. So he's kind of along the same lines as going to be what Girardi was. Is he kind of out now as a managerial candidate, and they need someone young and cool and hip to get along with these new wave, you know, sabermetric, you know, launch angle, you know, route efficiency type of players we got coming in now?
Well, I mean, Santa Claus, the old man for the Cubs, got along. How can you say that?
Yeah, but, you know, he's very, you know, what I guess you would call hip or cool. And, you know, he does all that goofy stuff with, you know, I'm going to bring, you know, snakes into the clubhouse, and we're going to do magic and all this other fun stuff to try to enlighten the players, where, you know, Girardi is just kind of, you know, basically he's an old school hard ass, is, you know, how you could look at it. I mean, he was, you know, he was probably an average player who hung around a very long time because basically he worked his rear end off. And, you know, I mean, it just kind of, you know, that rolled over into his managing. And, I, you know, again, I guess, like you said, the fact that he wasn't handing out trophies every week, it looks like, honestly, that may have cost him his job basically just because he wasn't a nice guy. You know, he wasn't, an apologist or anything.
Yeah, and that definitely comes out. But do you think it came to the point where, you know, he wasn't doing exactly what Brian Cashman wanted him to do? Because that's been kind of the consensus where, you know, the league is kind of going away where it's not just the coach making things happen or controlling what goes on in the field. You're becoming more of the guy that's going to do the things on the field that the front office wants done.
Yeah, he, for the first time, I think, in his career, he ran into a little problem with that this year. You know, I know they say front office, but it's really Brian Cashman. Cashman was really upset that he called out Gary Sanchez publicly. Girardi did. You know, because Sanchez, he's a great hitting catcher, but he's poor defensively. And, you know, Girardi has called him out for that in the media before. You know, and then he was also not totally enthralled with the decision to bring Chris Carter in. You know, because he, Girardi, as they say, wanted to go a different direction. So they, you know, they had a you know, a little bit at odds there with those couple things. I mean, we don't know what else, you know, could have went on behind the scenes or anything like that. I mean, we're not too privy to that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just kind of, well, you know, this just looks like it may have been, you know, may have been his undoing, those couple of comments. So. But we'll, you know, I guess we'll never really know. It's just kind of like, hey, this is what we're reporting.
What does Mr. Fantasy think of this?
I don't know. He went away. So he's, he told me he would come back at 10 after to do the last 20 minutes with me when you vacate us today. So if I remember, I'll have to ask him up there. So. But, you know, like even the article I found here, they mentioned the Yankees are looking for somebody in the A.J. Hinch, Dave Roberts mold, and they described that as younger, relatable to players, analytically inclined, and open to fresh ideas while working in concert with the front office. Now, there's one hell of a quote, Dan. Does this, and now this is what I'm really interested in here on your kind of opinion here, Dan, does this mean basically Cashman wants a puppet and he wants to run the team through his manager?
Pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much what we said.
So, you know, cause I mean, with a quote like that, that's really what it sounds like. And I'm not saying in any way, shape or form Hincher or, you know, Roberts are puppets in any way to their team. But, you know, with this quote, it really sounds like, you know, Cashman would love to name himself manager and can't. So instead, he's just going to get a guy who, well, you know, I told you to do this, now go out and do it. So. You know, just one of the more interesting things that kind of fell out. And, you know, obviously when you're a fun thing like that, when you're the Yankees, these are the kind of things you got to deal with, right?
Yeah, but I don't really think that's going to make the difference. I mean, you know, we kind of brought it up. I don't even know if we talked about it, but, you know, you mentioned the Red Sox, the Yankees, I forgot who the other team was, you know, went to the playoffs, fired the coach, the Nationals. Then we've got teams that have been to the playoffs in the past and didn't make it this year, the Giants in particular. And while they may have reorganized some of the, you know, the pitching coach and a couple others, they still have the head coach going on. So, you know, bringing in a new, quote, relatable head coach, I don't think it's going to change a whole lot for them.
Yeah, it will be interesting because, I mean, we'll have to see, you know, like Alex Cora with the Red Sox is a first-time manager. You know, Davey Martinez, who got the Nationals job, is finally a first-time manager, you know, after years of being a candidate for just about every open job there was. You know, we'll have to see who the Yankees go with. And I don't know, is there another opening? Did anybody else get fired that we I can't remember right now? Didn't the Phillies hire a guy, or are they still looking? Oh yeah, they hired Gabe Kapler, so they're okay. But you know, are these guys relatable, Dan? Is that what we're looking for? They're going to be able to relate to their newfangled era players and be, you know, analytically in sync with the front office now?
I don't know. I mean, to me, you definitely have to be able to use all the information that's available to you, but not all of it's right.
Yeah, sadly, I you know, I'm sure you know I was being a little sarcastic there with the analytical stuff because you're incredibly stupid, I think that all is, and to try to, you know, get a manager to factor that in is just beyond ridiculous. You know, you gotta get your guy, give him his team, and then let him go out and do his job. If he can't do his job, then you get rid of him. So, you know, that's
I mean, I don't think it's so much being relatable to players, but he has to know his players.
Right. So, you know, I mean, obviously guys like Girardi and Farrell must have known something, and even Dusty. They won a lot of games. You know, but remember, one of the reasons Dusty was let go is because they wanted a manager who would have the relationship with Bryce Harper to get him to stay. So, you know, it's just, I mean, is that going to be like Davey Martinez's make or break thing? If Harper goes away as a free agent, does he lose his job?
Yeah, I mean, when they say relatable, I mean, is the manager supposed to, you know, hang out with these guys and play video games after game day or practice?
Yeah, you know, that would be one of those things I would love to have answered. You know, because oddly, it seems like that would be something Joe Maddon would actually do with the Cubs. But yeah, I don't understand. I mean, you know, all this time I was always kind of under the impression that, you know, the manager that was there to kind of coach the guys and help them get through a, you know, an incredibly long season. I mean, we know baseball is much longer than any of the other leagues, and you know, the physical demands really take their toll. So I was kind of under the impression they were there to do that. I didn't realize they had to, you know, let guys sit on their lap and rock them to sleep when they were having bad dreams. So yeah, I the game has obviously even passed me by even more, you know, than it has before, because this is just kind of mind blowing to me. You know, when it was just like, oh yeah, well, you know, he didn't relate to the players. What do you mean he didn't talk to them? He didn't? How, you know, how didn't he relate? I would have loved for them to go into a little more detail like that, but yeah, they did not do it. So,
well, you know, and you mentioned the fact that the candidates have to go through a press conference, but you notice, you know, you question it. But again, you notice the media that covers the team doesn't dive into it any deeper. Oh, he wasn't relatable to the player. Oh, okay. And then that's the end of the, you know, move on to the next question, because we're not going to be actual, you know, journalists and look into it more.
So, yeah, you know, yeah, I guess, you know, it gives those guys something to, you know, something to work on. So, you know, I just, you know, it's going to be really interesting to me to see how these full press conferences go. And, you know, then I wonder how many New York media will actually attend. So, But, it, you know, we did, you know, I mentioned that, you know, Alex Cora was officially announced as the Red Sox manager. And they had some vacancies on the staff there, Dan, and one of them was pitching coach. Now, what was interesting is they promoted Dana, and I'm going to guess this is Lavangi, to the position. Now, he's been with the Red Sox for 27 years. He was a minor league catcher in their system. Then he was a bullpen catcher, a pro scout, a major league advanced scout, a catching instructor, and a bullpen coach. Now, what makes it interesting, Dan, is he's now the Red Sox pitching coach, but yet he was never a pitcher, and this makes him one of the few non-pitchers to have ever tried to do this. Now, as a catcher, obviously, he's going to have a little insight into, you know, how to work with pitchers and that kind of stuff, but are you surprised they went with, you know, a non-pitcher and, you know, maybe they didn't hunt somebody out? I mean, it basically just looks like they went, oh, well, this guy's got the most seniority in the, you know, in the organization. Let's give it to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, it gives me a little bit of hope. Maybe I can get a job with a team in 15, 20 years. Yeah. I could be head coach.
There you go. You know, and obviously, I mean, the one with the most success was Dave Duncan. You know, he was a former catcher who, along with Tony La Russa, you know, they had incredible success in Oakland and then when they went over to St. Louis. But, you know, like most of the guys hired, you know, like Carl Willis, he was a former pitcher. Jim Hickey, who the Cubs brought in, is a former pitcher. Of course, we know Mike Maddox is a former pitcher. And then Dan Worthen, you know, from the Mets was a former pitcher. Of course, we know Dave Rigetti, who the Giants just bumped up into the front office, was a former Yankee pitcher. So, yeah, it, you know, it just seems to be kind of pitcher, 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 and then this guy. So, you know, and obviously there, you know, there were some issues at the end of that Red Sox rotation. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's tough to tell, but, I mean, just kind of looking at it real quick, is this a, you think this is going to end up being a good hire for them?
Oh, I mean, did they say how long his contract's for, or does that even matter?
No, they didn't mention anything about the contract or anything like that, so. So.
I couldn't say, I mean, but if he doesn't turn Price around, I don't know if he'll be there after 2 years.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of the big key, isn't it? With all the money they've got invested in David Price, that has to be his pet project, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I just thought, you know, like to me it was exciting because I see former catcher, you know, and, you know, he never made it to the majors. He was just a minor league catcher. You know, and obviously he paid his dues. He's been in the Red Sox organization for 27 years. So, you know, I mean, I hope it works out for him. I mean, you and I don't ever, you know, we rarely wish anything bad to happen to anybody unless we thoroughly dislike them, like Mr. Fantasy. But, oh, so, but yeah, I thought it was a really kind of a, you know, a little off the cuff hire with a new guy coming in. Didn't you kind of think they would bring in a veteran pitcher to work with a brand new manager, you know, or a former pitcher like that to take parole, you know, a Chris Bosio, you know, guy like that.
Well, then you got to wonder if they discussed with him if that's what they were doing.
You know, they couldn't get Pedro Martinez out of the broadcast booth to come down and work with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, I'm sure he's.
Could you imagine Pedro as? Could you imagine Pedro as your pitching coach? Oh, that would be worth the entertainment, though. But you know, since we're rolling along here, you know, with baseball, Dan, you know, the big guy that I'm sure you and I are probably gonna talk about till the end of whenever he decides to sign is gonna be Shohei Ohtani. You know, he's getting ready to enter the, you know, the draft. I believe they're, if it makes sense here, it's going to be kind of like the old posting system for him. As it works out, the Rangers can offer him the most money at $3.535 million. The Yankees are next at $3.25 million, and then the Twins are just behind the Yankees at $3.245 million. You know, obviously he's going to probably end up going to one of these teams, being that the money is right there, unless he really has his heart set on going somewhere else. But no team has popped up as a front runner. When it comes to these three, do you got a favorite? Because I kind of do, but do you see him, if you've got to pick between these three, where do you have him going? You know, or let me give it to you like I give it to Mr. Fantasy on Sundays. When we have three guys at the same price on FanDuel, I ask them to put them in order. So put the teams in order, Dan. Again, the Rangers have the most money. Then it's the Yankees and Twins. Just list them 1, 2, 3 for me. You think he'll sign with who has the best chance of signing them, and then second and third?
Yankees, Rangers, Twins.
Yeah, you're kind of in agreement with me. That's exactly how I thought it was going to shake out. I really think when it's all said and done, this guy's wearing a Yankee uniform. The only other teams who can offer him seven figures, the Pirates can offer him $2.2675 million, the Marlins can offer him $1.74 million, and the Mariners, Dan, there you go, there's my sleeper team, $1.57500 for the total there. So it really looks like it's going to come down to him being a Ranger, you know, a Yankee or a Twin. You know, obviously the Yankees have Masahiro Tanaka, so I think that's going to be kind of a huge in for him. But, you know, the Rangers did have some success with Hugh Darvish. Do you think maybe that might give them a little bit of footing when they start to talk to this guy?
I think it gives them a little bit of footing. I'm surprised there's not more National League teams in there. You know, looking at the CBA, I still have to read it over like 7,000 times because the way they do things with qualifying offers now is completely different than they used to. You know, if the Cubs don't sign Davis and Arrieta, it would actually be in their favor. Because they would actually get more money in the international pool draft.
Yeah. So, yeah, I read that today. I didn't understand it, but, you know.
You know, I could see why it took them, what month is this? Almost 10 months to, you know, finalize and put out the CBA, because it's highly complex compared to the last one.
It's a good thing you're going to be going to law school then. I mean, oh, wait. So, yeah, you know, I just thought of, you know, because obviously, you know, he's gonna be the big name over and over that, you know, we're going to end up hearing about or talking about. And, yeah, I was just kind of curious, you know, where you think he's going to go.
I mean, to be honest, I mean, you know, like you said, the Rangers have had some luck with you, but international-wise, I'm sure the Yankees still hold a great value internationally. And I'm sure, you know, with Ichiro coming out of there, that the Mariners still hold something big. I would think it'd be pointless for the Marlins to even pick him up or look at him if they're going to
– yeah. You know,
let Giancarlo go. So that would seem, you know, wasteful.
Yeah, like, you know, like.
But I've got, you know, two things on him, though. I mean, like I said, I was surprised more American League teams would take a look at him, seeing as he not only pitches, he can hit. So he's kind of that dual player. But at the same token, you know, with the way the Japanese guys have gone, do you think they would try to implement some of that into it, where can you find a way that he only pitches on one day a week?
Yeah, you know, it is, you know, that is a possibility, you know, depending on where he goes. Now, you know, both Darvish and Tanaka have adjusted to the 5-day rotation. Of course, you did miss an entire year with Tommy John surgery, and, you know, Tanaka has had injuries, it seems like, throughout his career. Like, I don't think he missed a start last year, but he's definitely dealt with injuries even while making those starts. So, yeah, you wonder, you know, if a team would try to set that up. And then you wonder, as a player, you know, maybe he would lean towards an American League team and then kind of get them in talks of allowing him to DH. So you think maybe the American League could be the better landing spot for him?
Could be, and wouldn't be a bad spot with the Yankees. I think, you know, I can't remember who they're out, but, you know, that's a possibility, an opening. And then I think the other opening, again, of course, would be the Rangers, because, I mean, I think they kind of lost out with their guy.
Yeah, well, I believe the Yankees had Matt Holliday on a 1-year deal, and I saw the Rangers just non-tendered Mike Napoli. So technically, right now, both teams have openings at designated hitter. Now, if a team was to do this, you know, obviously he's going to pitch one day a week. You know, I don't think he could DH the other six, though. What would be, like, your limit? Are you looking at 2 or 3, or how many games would you give him as a DH? And that's if a team is even willing to do this. They may say, hey, you're just going to pitch.
I mean, the way it goes, I think you're better off letting him DH the day he plays, the pitches. Because, and, you know, again, that's another one I'd have to look into the CBA and read into that a little bit more. Because I don't know if it's mandatory that your pitcher can't bat. Because, of course, we've seen when the Giants were, you know, in Oakland, Madison Baumgartner was able to take to the plate, as opposed to, you know, not batting at all. And you've got to imagine, and, you know, this is where I think you can catch a loophole, where maybe he has a great at-bat, great couple at-bats, but his pitching is off that day. I don't see why you wouldn't be able to pull him, leave him in the DH position. So therefore, you don't even have to double switch it out, do any of that stuff. But again, I have to read into the CBA a little bit more, figure out if you could do that.
Yeah, you know, I believe unless they change the rule, I don't believe you're required to use a DH. To switch them out like you're talking about, I don't know officially how that would work. If they would be able to leave him in as a DH, I think they might lose him once he was removed from the game as a pitcher. But then again, you know, you never know with some of these rules. So, yeah, you'll have to see if you can come across some type of ruling on that one way or the other. But, you know, I mean, obviously there are some big free agents out there. You know, we talked about, you know, you being out there. And, of course, we're going to hear a lot about Arrieta. But, yeah, this guy is, you know, he's going to be a, you know, a big, big fish that we're going to hear a lot about. So it's just one of those.
Oh, my God.
One of those fun things. And, you know, uh-oh.
No, I was going to say, we're, aside from Davis and Arrieta, I know there's a couple more, but Yu Darvish, his contract is up, so that qualifying doesn't matter because he was traded. Is there anybody else? You know, because when it looks like it, the way the Cubs have gone, and not so much the way the Cubs have done things, more the way Theo's done things, is he offers the qualifying and lets them go.
Yeah.
So that he can get the compensation pick. He's never had a history of re-signing guys like that. So I think more or less in their best interest, we're not going to see Arrieta or Wade. Well, we both know Wade Davis is not getting re-signed by the Cubs because they just don't pay the money for a closer like that. I mean, are there anybody else that could be benefiting from not signing a guy on their team?
Well, you know, you have to wonder, you know, where the Royals are going to stand, because, you know, they have three guys. You know, they gave qualifying offers to Eric Hosmer, Lorenzo Cain, and Mike Moustakas. And, you know, being Kansas City, you got to figure only one is coming back. You know, they can probably afford to sign one, but I don't think, you know, they can sign two or even all three. You know, Alex Gordon is still on a pretty sizable deal there as well. So, it will be they'll be an interesting team to watch after, you know, having some success and, you know, just how long they can keep it together. So that could be kind of interesting to see. So, but yeah, you know, I think there were only nine qualifying offers given. But yeah, you know, a third of them were to Royals players. You know, it was three Royals and two Cubs. And then I think everybody else was single, you know, just to kind of protect yourself. You know, like the Cardinals gave one to Lance Lynn in case they, you know, they couldn't get negotiations done with them. And, you know, the Indians did the same with Carlos Santana. I know I've read that they want him back, but you know how it is. Somebody could blow the doors off him with an offer, and, you know, that could be the end of it. So.
Now, I mean, I guess this is kind of one of those open-ended questions. But the way the CBA and the qualifying offers go, the compensation, do you think that's why it seems to be down this year? Or is it really ever that high with that many guys getting qualifying offers? It felt like we had a few more last year.
Yeah, it seemed like we had a lot more last year and even more the year before that. You know, I mean, I think with the, you know, with compensation the way it is now, we'll see all these guys get signed. You know, remember last year, Jose Bautista sat around forever before the Blue Jays brought him back. You know, and then the year before that, the Orioles got a steal with Mark Trumbo. You know, they brought him in really late and, you know, he hit almost 50 home runs. I don't think we'll see that this year. You know, there are always guys who sit out there just waiting for the right fitter, however, but I don't think we'll see, you know, one of these nine guys being it because they have the qualifying offer attached to them. You know, I think these guys will all find, you know, be it re-signing with their old teams or finding new teams rather quickly because, you know, we're talking about nine guys who are pretty, you know, pretty talented players and at the, you know, the upper echelons of their positions. So I don't think it'll be too difficult for these guys to get new homes, you know, if that's what they're looking to do.
I mean, do you think Houston would be the team that would grab after Wade Davis to kind of shore up their bullpen?
You know, those are all the reports that I'm hearing right off the bat is he's their number one target. You know, it's just going to be, of course, if they can, you know, work out money like everybody else. You know, there are always teams that need closers. You know, they're very popular. So, you know, he might be able to wait and kind of pick and choose where he wants to go, but I think they're definitely going to be a front runner for him.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to the Yankees for a second, if they don't land, you know, if they're not in that market, you know, Arrieta just kind of flips. I don't know what you would say. I couldn't really get a huge grasp on him, but what I did see is he does have that composure when it comes to the postseason. Do you think he might be a guy they're looking at with the money that they have? Or do you think it'd be better for them to just kind of sit, maybe pick up Cece for another year and see how the market plays?
You know, I think they're going to bring Cece back, but I still believe they need one more guy. So if it, you know, it's either going to be Ohtani or, you know, it could be an Arrieta, you know, it could be a Darvish. You know, they definitely will probably bring in a starter. And, you know, you don't know in the Yankees, it could be a, you know, a top tier guy. So, but I know you have to leave us a little early today. So I will let you get on your way and we will talk with you tomorrow. But luckily, I was able to line up Mr. Fantasy here to fill it in. And before you go, Dan, I want to play this for you.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
So see, if you've listened to the Sunday podcast at all, you know that Mr. Fantasy is now with us. So, and Dan put that together, so we're very happy. And we have to welcome Mr. Fantasy aboard for the last half of the podcast. Yay! All right, Dan, we will talk to you tomorrow. So Dan goes away, but yeah, he's gone. We had to send Dan off with a smile as we move along, but you know, that kind of fun stuff. So, but I wanted to get into this with you because, you know, I know Dan's not a big time football guy, but you know, is Jerry Jones the spoiled kid who didn't get his way with Roger Goodell, so now he's threatening to sue Goodell in the NFL?
I didn't hear the story. So, I'm assuming Ezekiel Elliott is suspended now.
Well, I don't believe that is official, but here you go. The headline to it is Jerry Jones threatens to sue NFL if Roger Goodell's contract extension is approved.
Oh, wow.
So, and, you know, it does all stem from the Ezekiel Elliott suspension. You know, Jones was very upset about that. I guess he didn't have too much of an issue when his players got suspended for using drugs and some of the other things they've done where they were suspended. But, of course, those guys weren't star players. You know, Ezekiel Elliott is a star player, and the Cowboys season kind of hinges on him. So, yeah, that's where we're at now. I appear Jerry's just the spoiled child kicking and screaming because he can't get the suspension away from his guy, right?
That's what it sounds like, and I'm shocked. Roger Goodell's—he's made so much money for these NFL owners. How he could have sour grapes or be pissed is unbelievable to me. But yeah, I mean, that's the rule that's negotiated in there, that there's certain things that the NFL has the ability to suspend players for, and they expect a certain conduct. And when your conduct's unbecoming of, you know, of what the league expects or damages the shield, then, you know, this is what happens. And, you know, whether I agree with it or not, that's what's in place. And Jerry Jones needs to go, you know, after getting reform if he doesn't like it, but that's what the rules are that they're kind of tied to, as ambiguous as it may seem.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's just kind of humorous because, you know, Jones has really been on Goodell's side and has been a Goodell supporter. But now all of a sudden when it, you know, it comes down to his guy, you know, and the funny thing is earlier in the year in this article, it mentions that Jones actually voted in support of a contract extension for Goodell. But now all of a sudden it goes the other way. And again, you know, yeah, you've just got to kind of look at it as he's basically just a spoiled child. So.
Yeah, and you got to look, for the commissioner, you got to look at what he's done for the sport and where it's gone. And a lot of people don't like him, but, you know, as an owner, you can't, that doesn't matter to you. Has he made your brand more valuable, more appealing, and everything he's done has done that up until the boycotts this year. And I don't think he's handled that the right way, but, you know, the protesting, but everything else that's happened has really grown the sport and their company. And I just don't get why, you know, Jones would do that. You know, he's not thinking right. He's, you know, with this whole thing.
Yeah, he's just pouting. You know, and the sad part is, I mean, you know, it's not like Goodell's really going to be at a huge loss. You know, he's made like $200 million since they made him commissioner. So I'm willing to bet he's probably going to be okay if he doesn't, get his job back. And he does need a 2/3 approval rating, from the owners. And looking at it here, and you don't know how accurate this is, but because this could be a quote coming out of Jerry Jones's group, but they're saying Jones has 12 to 15 owners who will vote against the contract extension, and that would get Goodell out. Now, the interesting thing is, if Goodell does go out, does Jones think he's going to be able to make himself commissioner? Is that where this is headed?
I don't think that's what he thinks. I sure hope not, because that would be so – you can't have an owner be commissioner. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's, if there's enough votes to not get it through, because you think that Kraft doesn't, Kraft is still at odds with him and Jerry Jones, and they're going to be the two of the most powerful owners in the league. They carry a lot of weight. So you got to think if those two don't want him to be there, he won't be.
Yeah. Well, oddly, I'm wondering if Jones kind of shafted himself here. When he was, obviously he's a big mouth. We've all heard him. We know he likes to shoot his mouth off. And apparently, from a report I heard earlier, he went after the Giants owner, the Mara family, who have been around a very long time. He went to Bob Kraft, and then he also went to the Rooney family, who have owned the Steelers since the beginning of time, and told them that he was going to be suing them. Now, these are three owners you want on your side. And a scare tactic like that isn't going to work with these three because they've been around for so long. So I'm wondering if maybe he shot his mouth off a little too soon and, kind of got himself in trouble.
And I'm just wondering, what is he going to sue them for? Monetary? I mean, if he sues the NFL for monetary damages, he's paying up too. I mean, I don't know how you do that. Yeah. Can do that. And there's got to be something in the collective bargaining for the owners, that says you can't, that it goes through arbitration and you can't file a lawsuit. I got to imagine there's protection there somehow.
Yeah. Oddly, he hasn't given the reasons for his lawsuit because I think we both know it's not going to happen. But here's the reasoning they're going with for why he doesn't think Goodell should get his job back. Handling of player protest staged during the national anthem. Of course, the league's pending 6-game suspension of Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. The league's handling of relocation of two teams to Los Angeles, oddly, which Jerry Jones helped engineer. So, and then a lot of the other owners are upset with Goodell because they actually believe he's given Jones too much power. So it's kind of an interesting two-sided sword there. If a lot of the, maybe smaller owners or, smaller market owners are looking at it like, Jerry has too much say so. So that's kind of interesting. They also mentioned about the quote here is, most owners would admit that Roger has done a terrible job handling the anthem controversy and a terrible job explaining the TV ratings decline. I don't know what they wanted him to do about the anthem controversy. What was he supposed to do? Was he supposed to suspend guys, fine guys? How was he supposed to handle that?
Well, I'll tell you, if I was him, and this is what didn't happen and what the NFL owners should have done, and they didn't, they're at work, you've got to abide by the rules. There's things I can't do at work if I wanted to protest and stuff. And what I would have done is I would have found an avenue for these players to support their cause. They feel that minorities aren't being treated equally by police and in other situations. And that's fine. You can have that feeling, but you've got to help them find an avenue other than the avenue they were doing, because most Americans, I think a majority of Americans think there's certain things that are sacred, and the national anthem and the American flag are two things that are just untouchable. And I know you have the right to do it, but it doesn't mean you should. And if I was him, I would have pulled the leadership, you know, together and said, look, I support your right to protest. Let's help you find another avenue other than during the national anthem. And that's, I think, causing the doubt, you know, decline in television rating. I think a lot of people are turning it off and don't want to deal with it. And that's how I would have done it. And nobody came out and did that. Everybody tried to support the players. And, you know, Jerry Jones had the one episode where he was, you know, told they had to, but he went out and linked arms with them. You just can't disrespect the national anthem. That's the reason the American flag is the reason you have the ability to do all this stuff. And let's put things in perspective. Respect that. Use your right to protest somewhere else. And National Football League has a lot of reach and has a lot of ways they could do this. They could run commercials, you know, during the things supporting their views. They could, you know, do something pregame before the national anthem or after the national anthem. They could do something before the, you know, before the coin toss and the kickoff. They have lots of ways to do it, but they screwed it up by allowing the players to continue to do this and not putting things in perspective for the players, because the people who are paying to see the product don't want to see that. And that's what they do.
So now, you know, besides the flag protest, isn't, you know, poor play another result of TV ratings? And that's not Goodell's fault. He doesn't put the players on the field.
Nope. And there were a lot of, we were talking about it, you know, Sunday, there were a lot of dog games this weekend where you just knew they weren't going to be competitive. Some of it's due to injury. You know, the Houston Colts game was bad because the Colts are bad, but they don't have their best player due to injury. And Houston had just lost, you know, their best player due to injury. That's nobody's fault. But then there's, you know, the Browns, the 49ers, you know, and you can go through lots of teams that are just bad. And yeah, you're right. That has nothing to do with good, you know, with the commissioner. That has everything to do with the teams.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can add in, you know, my Seahawks were dogs last week. I mean, it's, you know, an embarrassment that an NFL field goal kicker misses three field goals. You know, and then, you know, I mean, a couple of the games were just, you know, completely uncompetitive. The Rams embarrassed the Giants and the Eagles embarrassed the Broncos.
You know, and think about this, and this is something else, and we've touched on it, but we really haven't talked about it. And now that we're looking at the decline in attendance and, you know, because of the protests and poor play. But another thing you got to think about, how many cities have been alienated by the NFL? And you just look at this year, you know, San Diego, Oakland. There's a third one. Who else am I missing that just they tried to hold the city hostage and they didn't get – I'm sorry? St. Louis. Yes. So they hold these cities hostage. Then they pull their NFL franchise out of the city. And they just expected all these people, you know, St. Louis supported the Rams. You think Oakland has such a long history and, you know, we're huge fans and, you know, we're crazy and you pull your franchise out of there. What do you think is going to happen? You talk about major populations of people who you've just disenfranchised and don't, you know, if the Bears were to pull out and, you know, because they didn't get their way, it would be hard for me to continue to support, you know, the NFL because that's my team. And if they're going to do that, then, you know, screw them. I probably would walk away too. So look at these major metropolitans that they've just alienated on top of the poor play and the protest.
Well, to be fair, it's not the first time they've done it to Oakland.
No, I understand that, but you know, how many times can you have that, you know, screw you attitude that we can do what we want. And if you don't like it, we're going to take, you know, take our toys and go. And at some point, then people stop pulling up their money.
Yeah. You know, it's definitely, you know, something I don't think they can expect. And you know, a lot of these people don't realize when it comes to looking at ratings is these are just television ratings. And, you know, it's done on an average anyways. But now this doesn't include anyone who might be streaming or, you know, all the different ways to watch television now. So we don't really have an accurate report of how much or even if ratings are down. I'm sure they're down a little because I've heard a lot of, you know, a lot of boycotts from the Anthem protests like you talked about. But, you know, with all these other ways to watch now, it's difficult to get an accurate rating on anything.
You know, I can tell you one thing that I used to judge it is, you know, I go out every Monday night with a bunch of guys and we go watch, you know, Monday Night Football and have wings and,
oh, yeah.
and whatever.
You
and
every
year previously, it's packed. This year, there's nobody there. Now, I don't know if it's because, you know, the place I go did something and they're not promoting right, but I can tell you Monday nights are geared towards the NFL at this place, and there's nobody there anymore. The place is half full at best, and it's just, you know, shocking compared to, you know, previous years.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, you know, I mean, you can tell, obviously, just from watching games that attendance is down. You know, I mean, the idea of moving the Chargers to San Diego or to Los Angeles was just a complete joke. You know, nobody's going to those games. So, you know, but I know we're getting short on time here, but I wanted to get your opinion before we run out. The Packers cut Martellus Bennett. They mentioned something about an undisclosed injury designation or something. You know, now, is he done? Because he sent out a tweet earlier that said this may be his last year. Is it his last year? You see Marty going away or working in the, you know, on one of those morning shows somewhere?
I think he kind of, you know, we don't have insight, but it just seemed like you expected so much more from him. And we've talked about it, you know, when the Packers got him, that this was a great signing. And when the, you know, even if you go before that, when the Patriots got him, we thought him and Gronk together, this was going to be huge. And it just never worked out for that. So I just wonder if it's been the end. Maybe he's lost interest or, you know, and I'm not calling his work ethic into play. I don't know anything about him. I've called other people that I had more information. But I just wonder if maybe he just hasn't been committed to it and it's just time for him to go. Because I can't explain the loss of production from him from when he left Chicago to when he went to, you know, the other stops he's made. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, he did have 55 catches with the Patriots last year and 7 touchdowns. So, I mean, it wasn't a terrible year, but, you know, I guess, like you said, maybe we were just expecting a little more, you know, out of him. I think maybe we were looking for more for like that 90 catch year he had with the Bears.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought he'd be one of those guys, especially in those offenses, rival Greg Olsen or something like that as far as production went from the tight end position, but never really got close to it. One year doesn't make it, you know, when you're talking about it.
All right, well, time for Mr. Fantasy and I to take off, so we got to thank you for stopping by and filling in for Dan real quick here. Dan and I are back tomorrow at 5:30, so we'll try to do this again. You just never know what goes on, but you know what to do while we're gone. SportsTimeRadio.com, check out the new blog, link over to the Facebook page, give that a like, jump on the Twitter feed at SportsTimeRadio, follow along with that. You can also find Mr. Fantasy and I on Twitter as well. As always, a big thanks for listening live. You know, it's really cool when you jump out and do that. But the podcast is also available for you anytime you want to listen to it over at tunein.com. Hey, before you hang up, did you watch the...
Did I watch what?
The Ric Flair 30 for 30.
I got to watch it tonight. I did record it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so did I.